Meditation Instructions by Venerable Ujjotika.
Welcome everybody. Last week we talked about dissolving Penganyana, Bayanyana, seeing danger, Adinawanyana, seeing disadvantage in mental and physical process. Wanting to be free from the process, and at least sankhanyana, which is very important. To be free from something, first we need to understand that. And to understand something, we need to look at it very carefully. Okay? So there's no way to overcome anything, even about mundane happenings in our life, in our body or in our life, in any situation. To overcome any kind of difficult situation, the first thing necessary is to look at it very carefully, to understand it very deeply, completely. Then to overcome. So just to overcome something, we cannot run away. Running away is not overcoming. There is no place to hide. Nowhere to go. In Burmese, they have one saying, Kiriya Mimhi. There is no land you can go and escape. Wherever you go, you are in the process. You take with you physical and mental process. So, only understanding it is overcoming, actually. So, when we feel that we are trapped in this process and we want to escape, sometimes we thought that if I just don't pay attention to these things, just turn away and forget about it, I'll be free. But no, this is not the right thing to do. So, a meditator comes to a point when he or she feels that watching this mental and physical or mental and bodily process is so boring and so disenchanting, there's nothing good about it. And just by watching it, is you don't really get peaceful. Only in the beginning you feel very calm and peaceful because your very gross kilesas, defilements, have subsided for a while. You feel very peaceful. After a while, just watching the mental and physical process is tiring. Not just boring, it's a kind of being trapped in the process. You don't want to see it anymore. You are really tired of it. But there's no other way to escape from it other than paying it even more close attention, looking at it even more closely. So, Monsitu Kimya Danyana, after that, when that looking at it with even deeper and stronger attention makes the mind even more calm, quiet, mindfulness becomes stronger, samadhi, concentration becomes stronger, and then the mind becomes very detached, which is called Sankharupaka Jnana. You are still watching it very closely with a totally detached mind, with a totally detached attitude, with total disidentification. You don't see it as a thing, as a self. So total detachment, total equanimity, but very strong attention. Sankhara means anything conditioned. Actually, it means mental and physical process. So this process is called sankhara, and upekha means equanimity. So there are many aspects of equanimity. The energy is balanced. You are not trying too hard, you are not relaxing too much. Because both extreme is imbalance. Trying too hard is one imbalance. Relaxing too much and taking it too easy is also imbalance. And before that stage, you are too anxious to overcome. I want to get out of it. I want to overcome it. I want to escape. That is also a kind of agitation, a kind of imbalance in the mental attitude. But when you come to this Sankharupaka Jnana, you are not too anxious to overcome it. With total equanimity, you just pay complete attention to it. So even before this state, in the fourth insight, which is Udvabhayajnana, seeing rising and passing away very clearly, even in that state, you have some sort of equanimity, upekkha, sometimes. But in that jnana, it happens sometimes only. Sometimes you have a lot of joy, sometimes you feel very happy, sometimes you see very clearly and get attached to that clear insight even. But in this state, you are not even attached to seeing things clearly. You are not even attached to this equanimity. Before that, you feel so calm and balanced that, oh, you like it very much. Oh, now it's so easy. Meditation is just happening. But you lose it again and again. In this state, you don't lose it anymore. If you just keep practicing and maintain it, it stays for a long time. Equanimity stays for a long time. You feel so detached that this equanimity is compared to the equanimity of Arhant. An Arhant stays in that mental state all the time. A meditator, a beginner, I mean, a person who is not really enlightened, can stay there with constant awareness, maintaining constant awareness. But an Arhant, for an Arhant, the awareness is natural. He never loses, or she never loses, this equanimity, the awareness. So actually, in Vipassana jnana, there are only three jnanas: anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And different degrees of seeing, experiencing anicca, dukkha, and anatta makes the insight different. So in Burma, one teacher who taught meditation, he talked about only three jnanas: seeing impermanence and becoming disenchanted with impermanence and ending of impermanence. In Burmese, they say phipye mien ne, phipye moun ne, phipye soun. So even before this state of insight, the meditator has experienced some aspect to a certain degree, this equanimity. Only at this stage it is complete, total. So I want to give you some Pali quotations. Sankhara wa sankhare vipassanti. Vipassanti means to look at it very deeply, in a very extraordinary way. Ordinarily we see things, we understand things, but in this stage we see things extraordinarily, very, very clear. Sankhara wa means the sankhara only, sankhari of the sankhara. Which the first sankhara means the mind which is watching. The second sankhari, which means at the sankhara, or toward the sankhara, which is the object. It could be rupa or vedana or citta, any of the five khandas. Vipassanati means watching. So a process is watching another process, not you anymore. And in this stage, it becomes so clear that you really feel it. There's no I watching this. And to break through, this sort of total disidentification is necessary, and this sort of, this kind of very deep, very strong balance. So upekkha has many meanings. Happiness, unhappiness, neither happy nor unhappy is also called upekkha. Happiness is one extreme, unhappiness is another extreme. Neither happy nor unhappy is one upekkha, a kind of upekkha. So in this stage, the meditator is neither happy nor unhappy. Before that, sometimes you get very happy about the way you see so clearly. Sometimes you feel unhappy about being trapped in the process. But now, there's no happiness, there's no unhappiness. Total balance, total equanimity. The energy before, sometimes it's too much, too little. Now, not too much, not too little. Just right. So, some of you who can understand some Burmese, I want to give you a few quotations in Burmese. Si nya mya phit khait ka ke tu tin khara do nai apit myin chin ni ngwe chin lut lo yue sin chin chin a ma ma kaung lu thin yue a ma ya chin long ma shi daw bi. This is a very important point. Before this insight, we see the sankharas, physical or feeling or any kind of process, we see that there are disadvantages. We see that as not good. This is not good. This process is not good. And nimiji means to become some sort of unhappy, but not really negative kind of unhappiness, to become disenchanted. So in this stage, there's no unhappiness about it anymore. And before this state is Monchitu Kumya Danyana, which is wanting to escape, and wanting to escape and thinking what to do about it. At this stage, there is no wanting to escape anymore, no thinking about it anymore. Total, complete attention only. Which becomes even more simple. The meditation becomes very, very simple now. And sometimes before this state, because you see physical and mental processes as disadvantages, sometimes you don't want to pay complete attention. You want to turn away. Sometimes you think that before this state, it was so good to meditate. It was so peaceful, so enjoyable. But now, I think my meditation is not very good anymore. That sort of being dissatisfied with even your meditation happens before this. But now, there is no dissatisfaction with it anymore. So see what happens to the mind. The mind is totally detached, total disidentification, and no desire to be otherwise anymore. Just watching it very simply. So this is the best state of mind. Not wanting to do anything anymore, just paying total attention. Just try to imagine even that state of mind and see how free you can feel. You don't want to be otherwise. No matter what happens, it doesn't matter. Just total attention. Even thinking and imagining this makes you very peaceful. All our life, we are either grabbing or grasping, or either pushing things away. No, no, go away. Oh, no, no, stay, stay. We are doing two things all the times. Reaching out and grabbing it, trying to keep things, or sometimes pushing things away. Don't, no, no, don't come, go away. So very tiring, that is very tiring. In this state of mind, we are not grabbing anything anymore. We are not reaching out for anything anymore. We are not pushing things away. We are just paying total attention. So it's a kind of total surrender also, in a way. Surrender to the process. Let anything happen. I will just pay complete attention. This is just the right attitude. So at this stage, you are not worrying about anything anymore, even not dying anymore. Even if you die at that moment, you feel completely okay about it. So if we have to die, we will die someday, but when we die, the best way to die is to be in that mental state. To accept the process completely. To pay total attention to understand it. No resistance. No fear. The best way to die. The best mental state. So I told you once, I was very, very sick a few times. Malaria, tonsillitis, and dysentery. Chronic. It was going on and on for months and months. Became very, very weak and sick and about to die. At first I was really worried about that. I was afraid to die. I didn't want to die. So I said, no, no, no. I want to live. But the harder I try, to hold on to life, the more tiring it becomes, because I worry too much. Somebody must do something for me. Nobody is doing anything for me now. Why have they given up? Nobody is around. I can't call anybody. I can't move. I can't say anything. I was thinking, why are they just leaving me, going away? Why are they not doing something for me? So that kind of thought made me even more unhappy and more tiring. At last I thought, maybe they have given up because they can't do anything anymore. And one of my friends said, he must be in coma because I was not moving anymore. I can't say anything anymore. So for a long time I just tried to hold on to life. But at one point I thought, I was so tired that I thought, it will be very nice to sleep, to go to sleep peacefully. It will be just a tremendous relief. I'm too tired now. So I determined to let go. But very important, one very important determination I made. I thought, if I have to die, I will die mindfully. Anyway, sooner or later we will die. So I decided that I will die mindfully now. And let go of all thoughts. And just keep my mind as relaxed and calm as possible. And maintain mindfulness. So slowly and slowly the mind becomes more and more peaceful, more and more peaceful. And I noticed that I was not so tired anymore. The tiredness was gone. The mind became very calm and peaceful. And then I fall asleep. I thought I fall asleep, and when I woke up again, my mind was very calm and peaceful again. I couldn't move, I couldn't say anything, but my mind was very, very calm and peaceful. So I thought, if I died at that moment, it would be really okay. So why are we afraid to die? Because we are attached. If we have no attachment, there won't be any fear. So meditation is, in a way, a very good preparation for that, and it is necessary, it is very important. People don't want to think about that. Whenever they hear about that, oh, it's a taboo word, don't talk about that, just talk about living. But those who are prepared to die, then only they are ready to live. Because most of us, although we are alive, we are not really living. We are resisting life so much. We are not really paying attention and learning enough from our life. So whenever I think about this insight, I thought, this insight is the best insight. Because we cannot die with the mental state of Magga or Pala. We cannot do that. Even Buddha didn't do that. Couldn't do that. At this stage, the mind has no fear. It is very pure and clear. Very pure and very clear. In Burmese word, it is Alompen Panshin Chilei. Panshin means pure. No tainted. Nothing tainted. Very pure and very clear. And the mind is very, very balanced. And it feels very peaceful too. No excitement, no joy, no elation, no happiness, but very, very peaceful. There's nothing comparable to it regarding the worldly state of consciousness. Very, very peaceful. No effort, no tension, no tightness. Before this state, we try very hard to concentrate, to meditate, we become tight. We have to remind ourselves to relax, relax, relax. Don't be so tight. At this state, no tightness anymore. Everything is so soft and gentle and relaxed. So very, very peaceful. Although the mind is very, very peaceful, that mental state is not even attached to that peacefulness. This is a very important point, because before this stage, we feel peacefulness, even in the fourth insight, we feel very peaceful, but we get attached to that peacefulness. And that becomes a hindrance. Peacefulness itself is not hindrance, but attachment to peacefulness is hindrance. But at this stage, there is no attachment to that blissfulness even. That's why it is so pure. Because if there were any attachment at all there, then it will not be pure. Because attachment is a kind of desire, a kind of lobha, craving. And the mind is not excited about anything at all. In the fourth insight, sometimes the mind gets excited, so happy about it, but now no excitement anymore. And very subtle, very clear, very precise, just on the right moment, just on the spot, every noticing is just right, not before, not after. In the beginning state when we meditate, sometimes the awareness or the attention is lagging behind. Something happened, later we remember, oh, something happened, I did not pay attention. And sometimes we are expecting something to happen. We are thinking, well, something is going to happen and I will pay attention to that. Like say when we are moving, we are thinking that I'm going to move and I'll pay attention. So our attention is a little bit off, not right on the spot. At this stage, naturally it is always ready on the point. Something happens and knowing is there. Attention is already there. So that is why we are not trying or becoming too anxious of even to pay attention. It is just happening perfectly. So this is the Pali. Eva mevayam sabba sankarihi mosetu kamo hotva. Thus, from all the sankhara, wanting to be free, pati sankhanu pastanaya, by watching the sankhara again, sankhari parigananto, observing the sankhara, ahama mati grita bhan adiswa, me or mine, not seeing. Whenever you watch it, you know that this is not me, this is not mine, there is nothing to get attached to. You cannot keep anything, not worth the trouble. So, aham mama, aham means I, mama means mine. Aham mama ti gaheta ba means to take, to grasp, to keep. Adiswa means not seeing. So in every noticing, you see that this is not me, this is not mine. You are not concerned with it. You are totally indifferent. Adiswa, bayansa nandinsa. Bayansa means begin before this state, you see it as a danger. But at this state, bayancha, not danger, nandincha means lacking, no lacking also. So bayancha, nandincha, vipahaya means eradicating, overcoming, overcoming fear, overcoming attachment. Adeswa, vipahaya, sabba sankhare su. Of all the sankharas, of all the process, mental and physical, udasino means just in the middle, not to this side, not to that side. Hoti mizato, mizato means middle. So this is the middle path actually. So we are getting very close to the real middle path. Before this state, the mind is on one side or on another side, not in the middle. So madhyatva means right in the middle. So sometimes when you relax for a while, even when you are relaxing, your mind is still mindful. Very briefly a thought might come, because with every insight, very brief thought in a glimpse, it might not last for a second even. When I say a thought, don't think that at that moment you are thinking in a sentence or in words. At this point, no words, no sentence, but just clearly seeing that this is just empty process. No being, no I. Devoid of being, devoid of soul. So, tunya sunya midam atinawa atininawa. This process is devoid of I or mine. Mine. My belonging. Mine. So no I, no mine. It is devoid of my, I, mine. So similar thoughts and insight came before, but at this stage it is more and more clear, more and more clear. This process does not obey anybody's wish. You can also see that it is just something happening. And puna cha prambhikve ariya savako iti pati sankati naham kwasmi kastasi kinchanatatamai, which means there is nothing that I need to worry about and nobody needs to worry about me. So sometimes we think like that, you know, in our ordinary life, ordinary thinking, we worry about other people, and sometimes we worry that others worry about us, or we like that also. Oh, somebody is concerned about me. But now you see that I'm not concerned about anything at all, and nobody needs to be concerned about me. There's nothing there, there's just a process. Many explanations from the text giving very, very detailed explanations, but only for scholars it is very useful. So at this stage, eva meva sache sankarupakhanyanam santipadam nibbanam santato patiti. So at this stage, the meditator see that the end of this process is real peace. We want to be in a certain form, certain life, certain state, we crave for that. We don't want to let go of all forms, all existence. But at this stage, the mind can see very clearly that the end of the process is the real peace. So before the mind has developed enough energy, enough clarity to give up the process, although the meditator can understand that any process is unsatisfactory, the mind still falls back watching the process. So that is what here it means. Sabbam sankhara pravottam vaisajjitva nibbanam eva pakkhantati. When the mind develops enough energy, it gives up all the sankhara and goes into nibbana. No che patati. If the person cannot do that, puna punam, again and again, sankhara ramana meva hodva bodhati, still come back and watch the sankhara, the arising and passing away of mental and physical process. So this happens again and again. The mind sometimes wants to reach or go into nibbana, but not enough energy to do that, falls back and watch physical or mental process arising and passing away until it builds up more and more clarity. So when this happens, one should understand that. Some people, they feel discouraged again. They say, oh, I fall back again and again. So this is very natural. Before, a few weeks ago, I told you about that too. You hold on to a rope, there's a very deep gorge, some very deep gap between two mountains, let's say, mountains, like a very deep opening in between. There's a tree and there's a rope or some kind of a vine, very thick vine, hanging there. So you take hold of the rope and then you swing. But when you feel that your swinging is not strong enough, you are afraid that you will go in between. So you cannot let go of the rope, you come back to this side again. And then take more momentum, then swing again. So after a few times, you feel that you have developed enough momentum, then you swing and you let go and it is going very fast, very fast, very fast. Then let go of the rope. So at that moment, you are not on this side, but you are not on that side either. You are in the middle, but you have let go of this side. So, can you come back? No, no way you can come, because you have let go of the rope. Although you are not on that side already, you are going there with all the energy and momentum. No way to stop it anymore. So you have let go of this side means you are not watching the mental and physical phenomena anymore. You are seeing that the mind is going toward total cessation. The end of physical and mental phenomena. And so, from this Sankharupaka jnana, the next jnana, which is if and when it happens, is this state. You have already let go. So this is called, this swinging state is called Sankharupaka and Anuloma, Parikama, Anuloma, Gotarabhu. Parikama means trying it again and again. Preparing your mind, developing momentum. And Anuloma means the same mental state actually, but with more momentum. Gotarabhu means you have let go. So that means you are cut off from this side already. But not on that side yet. And you fall into the cessation of Nibbana, the cessation of mental and physical process, Nibbana, which is called mega consciousness. So it happens very quickly in succession, in a very short moment, because one mental state lasts for a very, very short period, maybe a thousandth or a millionth of a second. So each mental state happens consecutively, and at that moment you cannot return anymore. And after that, total quietness. Total stillness, nothing rising, nothing passing away, no watching anymore. Because you cannot watch anymore. Before you go into the nibbanic state, you can see it from the outside, what it could be. Because you understand that if this mental and physical process stops, there will be total peace. But you are not in it. But when you are in it, you are not observing it anymore. You cannot do that anymore. Because to observe something, you must be out of it. So that's why when the person is in this nibbanic state, he's not watching nibbana anymore. He cannot watch it. Not even his mental state. Only after this state is another insight which is called Pachyavekana. You reflect on that world. A moment ago, it was very peaceful. There was no rising, no passing away. Very calm, very clear, very peaceful. Total peace there. So that kind of zooming into, going into cessation is a very powerful state of mind. Once that happens, you feel totally different. When after a while you come out of it, because mega happens one moment only, pala happens for 2 moments, maybe 3. Depending on the energy. And after that, reflection of what happened before happens. And when the reflection happens, your mind is very calm and peaceful. You look back and think about it. So this Pachyavekana jnana is actually a kind of thinking. So you think about it and understand that total peace is total cessation from mental and physical process. So the person reflects on many things. One is mega, pala, nibbana, and eradication of defilements and those defilements that are still left. So the first stage of enlightenment eradicates wrong view of self and doubt, ditti and vichikicca. Total eradication. Even in the first state of insight, you have overcome some of this ditti and vichikicca. Wrong view of self and doubts about what happened before, what happened later, many other doubts. But in this state, this is total eradication of doubt and wrong view. So there are many ways of looking at it. So here are a few very important words, a few sentences. Tikkha visada sura bhavena sankharesu ajju pikkhane tijyamani tam sankharupakanyanam anekawaram pottamanam paripaka gamanena anuloma jnanasa pachaya bhavam kichandam. Which means, tikkha means very sharp, visada means very clear, and sura bhavena, which is very important. Sura means very brave. We are so attached to something, even though it's painful, we cannot let go. Even to let go of that, we need a lot of courage. Trust and courage in the process. That's why sometimes people, they can feel that something is going to happen. If that happens, everything will be changed. I will not be the same anymore. And they stop there. They don't want to change. They want to be the same. So we have very conflicting motivations. We want to change. We want to be free. We want to be peaceful. But we want to stay the same. So many psychologists also pointed that out. Some people are in the neurotic state, but they are attached to the neurotic state. Some people are in depression, and they are attached to the depression. Very difficult to understand, but this is really true. So although we know that this process is so tiring, so painful, and when the moment comes, when we can see that something is going to happen and we will be totally changed, we will not be the same anymore, we will not feel the same anymore, they are afraid. So we need a lot of courage to change. Without change, how can we really grow? If we want to stay the same, we cannot grow. So this word is very important, sura bhavena. So with a lot of courage, sankhare su ijjupikani, watching the sankharas, watching the phenomenon, process arising and passing away. And then sankharupikanyanam, that insight of the process, anekavaram, many, many times, happens many, many times, again and again, again and again, it builds up more and more momentum, more and more energy. Pavottamanam happens, pripakagamani means becoming ripe. So for some kind of insight to become really ripe and mature, it needs to happen again and again and again and again. So it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Just like anger. You think about something that makes you angry, the more you think about it, the more you get angry, the more you think about it, the more you get angry and you explode. So very similar process. You look at the sankhara, you become more and more detached, more and more detached, more and more detached, until you are really ready to let go. Go now. Just let go. So the moment you let go, you're free. We want to be free and we are holding on to, I want to be free, I want to be free, but why don't you let go? You think that there is something worth keeping. You feel that, well, in this process, mental and physical process, there is something worth keeping. There is something that belongs to me. There is something that I like. Although one part of it I don't like, there is another part I like. So we are holding on to it. But when you really see that there is nothing to keep, there is nothing to hold on to, it does not belong to me, I don't want it anymore. When you are totally in that state, you just let go. So, my teacher once said, a lot of people came to my teacher, meditators, they say, Bhagavan sir, I really don't like to be reborn anymore. I'm totally disenchanted with life anymore, with life. It's so tiring. Very small enjoyment and too much pain, too much burden life is. So, at that time I was a very young monk, only about a few months. Ordained. But my teacher said that to that person, if you really don't want it, you will not get it. I was very surprised. Well, I don't want it, but is that simple? But later I understand that although we say that I don't want it, we are still holding on to it. I don't want it, I don't want it. But why don't you let go? So my teacher's way of talking is very gentle. He never put too much energy. He never tries to convince anybody. He never tries to convert anybody. So when his supporter or his student, many people ask the same question. He said the same thing to him, monks and lay people. He said, if you really don't want it, you will not get it. You are getting it because you want it. It's that simple. We are getting it because we want it. We are unhappy because we want unhappiness. But we are denying that, no, I don't want unhappiness. I only want happiness. But what do you mean by happiness? Fulfilling desire? So if we really don't want it, we are free then. So this Pali word is translated in Burmese, so for the benefit of those who can understand Burmese, a few of you here can understand Burmese. Tikka visada sura bhavina. So in Burmese it is Tenye Sanshin Yeyin Di Apipin. But very clear, you see? Tenye, very sharp. Sanshin, very pure, very clear. Yeyin, very brave. So the courage to change is very important. We need a lot of courage to change, to learn, to grow. I think there's a lot of psychological significance in this point. Brave. And also, pure. To be pure. To want to be free means to need to be pure. If we really want to be free, we must purify ourselves. Purify in sila, purify in samadhi, purify in wisdom. Without purification, we cannot be free. That's why this big textbook on meditation is called Visuddhimagga, the path of purification. By purification, we become free. Very clear. This is very clear. So if we really want to be free, we have to look deeply inside. What am I doing? With what motivation? Is my sila, my precepts, my behavior pure? Is my motivation pure? Is my mind clear and pure? Or am I brave enough? So if we are worthy of it, we will get it. So we need to live our life in such a way that we are worthy of it. We want something, but if we are not worthy of it, we will not get it. Any kind of thing, if I want your respect, if I'm worthy of it, I'll get it. If I want your metta, your loving kindness, if I'm worthy of it, I'll get it. So whatever happens in our life, happens because we deserve. We don't get anything undeserved actually. But a lot of us complain that, oh, why should this happen to me? Just tell yourself, because I deserve it. Whether it is good or not good, things happen to us because we deserve that. And once you understand this very clearly, you stop blaming. You stop blaming your karma even. You stop blaming your parents, you stop blaming your government. We are blaming, we are putting responsibility on another person or situations. We are not taking enough responsibility. Once you see that things happen to me because I deserve it, you stop blaming, then you learn and grow and change. Then things get better and better. So this right mental attitude is very important in everything we do. So in the last few moments of this breakthrough, among these three characteristics of process, anicca, dukkha, anatta, either of this will become very clear. For example, if a person hear very interesting explanation about the mental process, what happens in each moment. But very difficult to discuss, need to have a different teaching class to explain those things in detail. But not really necessary for a meditator to meditate. These things, if you haven't experienced it, it's very difficult to understand. But when you experience it, it's quite natural. You see that, oh, of course, it's so natural that things should happen this way. And also,
In that last moment, you observe either physical process or rupa or vedana or sanya or sankhara or vinyana. From the five khandhas, you observe only one. You cannot observe all five at the same moment because an object can be an object only once at a time, one at a time. One consciousness cannot observe five. One consciousness can observe only one object. And because you have to observe it repeatedly, if you are observing vedana, you observe vedana and anicca. Vedana anicca or vedana dukkha or vedana anatta. If you are observing rupa, you see rupa as anicca or dukkha or anatta. So only one object, only one aspect of the three characteristics, repeatedly. You don't switch to another object or another characteristic. These are very important points, I think. That's why in your meditation, when you are paying attention to vedana, it becomes more and more clear, stay with it, stay with it, stay with it. Make it more and more clear, more and more clear. If it is any kind of mental state, pay attention to that mental state again and again. Make it more and more clear. You understand all those things in general, but if you understand one thing completely, that is enough. So at that moment, from that moment of letting go, the mind cannot observe any of the five khandhas. It cannot experience, it cannot see impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, or non-self, non-ego anymore. It can only see total quietness, cessation. So then the person understands that nibbana means total cessation of phenomena. This is very difficult to talk about. It is not something that does not exist. Because if we say that nibbana means nothing exists, then we can also say that nibbana does not exist. Nibbana is an experience also. At that moment, the object also stops and the watching also stops. Two things stop. So a person feels like everything comes to an end. Just stop. How do you give an example of that? This state is beyond words. You cannot talk about it. As if you are carrying a very big burden and you drop it. And maybe you are pulling something very heavy and then the rope snaps. Some Pali sentence is very short and very clear. Yang kimchi samudya dhammam sabbam sabbantam niroda dhammanti. So samudya dhamma means the nature to arise. Yang kimchi, whatever has the nature to arise, sabbantam, all that is niroda dhammam, has the nature to. So you see this very clearly. Anything that has a nature to arise, has a nature to disappear, pass away, completely pass away. So after that insight, the person reflects on the experience and see that the ending of sankhara is total nibbana, it is total peace. And after a while, comes back to meditation again. But when the person comes back to meditation, he begins from arising and passing away again. Not from sankhara, sankharapitta, not from the tenth insight. He begins from the fourth insight again. And this is also another aspect of the breakthrough. After the breakthrough, you can see arising and passing away again, very clearly. There are two very important things about what changed. So the person has overcome sakkaya ditthi, believing himself, Vichitesa, he doubts. And Tilakta Paramata, Paramasa, this is very important. There are many methods of meditation, and many people are meditating. And we can say that they are meditating. Meditation has many aspects. But if a person believes that just practicing samatha can bring total freedom, that is a kind of silabhata paramatha. And also, there were some ascetics in the time of the Buddha who believed that if you just behave like a cow, you'll be free. You'll just burn out all your defilements. So, practicing like an animal, and torturing the body also, if you just torture your body, then you will burn out all your defilements. You become pure. That is a kind of wrong practice. So, silabhata paramasa means wrong practice. Practicing something wrong and believing that that will lead to freedom. So once a person has breakthrough this point, he can understand that no other practice can really lead to liberation. Only that practice which has this eightfold noble path can lead to liberation, freedom, can lead to the experience of nirvana. No other practice can lead to that. So you can test that any practice which has not this eightfold noble path, although it can give you some sort of quietness and peacefulness of mind, it can never lead to liberation. It has its own value, like just practicing samatha. It has its own value. But it will not lead to liberation. It might be a stage in your practice, but not the end stage. It cannot lead to real end, real goal. So there are many other practices and many people talk that, well, if you practice that, that will also lead you to nirvana. No. The only way that leads to nirvana is watching your own body and mental process. And for the foundation, you keep your sila pure. You keep your livelihood pure. Because without that sort of purity, your mind will never really build up enough courage and momentum, enough clarity. With guilt, if you live with guilt, you will never be free to observe things clearly and let go. Guilt is a prison. It traps you where you are. Whenever you feel guilt or shame, you cannot make any progress. So, keeping sila pure, keeping your livelihood very pure, keeping your mind pure, is necessary. Without that sort of purity, there can be no real freedom. So some people meditate, but they think that it's not really that important to keep the five precepts. They don't really try their best to keep their five precepts. So, if you don't keep your five precepts, and you meditate, and if you believe that that will lead you to liberation, that is silabhata paramasa, wrong practice. Clinging to wrong practice. Believing in wrong practice. So some people, sometimes in their meditation, they experience a very pure and peaceful mental state, once in a while. And they mistake that as real nirvana. And when the person has experienced real nirvana, he or she can see that that is not real nirvana. So mistake about nirvana is also overcome. And only in the third stage of enlightenment can the person overcome totally from greed and anger or frustration. The first stage of enlightenment doesn't really eradicate desire or greed or anger or frustration, only wrong view and doubts. The Sotapan still enjoys sense pleasure, but he has his sila very pure. He will never break his sila, and there is no desire even to break sila. For example, a Sotapa enjoys good food too, but he will not do anything to break his sila to get that food or any other thing like that. His livelihood also is very pure. He might be still doing business, but he will never cheat. He might get upset, he might get angry, he might get sad also sometimes. But whenever he takes time to watch that mental state again,
we can see that it is just a mental state and come out of it very quickly. You will not be there, trapped in that mental state. And the second enlightenment state does not totally eradicate any defilements, only weakens lobha and dosa. Only weakens greed, anger, frustration. But even after the third stage of enlightenment, this person still has some defilements, still clinging to a very special life, a pure existence. Not enjoying any sense pleasure, no anger, but very pure, peaceful happiness. Still enjoy that. And also, some sort of satisfaction, which is very close to a kind of pride. You're very satisfied by your achievement is. Yes. So to be very satisfied about your achievement also is a very subtle form of pride and clinging kind of desire also. So you see some very subtle forms of pride, very subtle form of attachment. And that can be overcome only by the fourth enlightenment. I keep forgetting the word. It's very difficult to remember the word. That's why sometimes I have to write down everything just to pick up and look at it. So sometimes I have to read and translate. Long time, it takes a long time to translate. Looking up the dictionary, finding the proper word. And if this person is a judge, he become a sotapanna, he has attained the first enlightenment, first state of enlightenment. If he is a judge, he will never do anything wrong. He will never take bribe and yes, he will never be corrupt, he will never do that. It's very fair, very honest. I don't think he will do that. We'll just give him another sentence. Good enough. Why should you kill anybody? You teach him. In some countries it's banned totally. You're not allowed to, life sentence is not allowed anymore. Which is a good thing. What's the point of killing a person? You don't teach him, you don't teach another person also. People are killed somewhere nobody knows. You think that we are punishing that person? We're teaching that person. He doesn't become a better person and nobody else become a better person for that. So anyway, if he is a judge, he will not do anything dishonest. Very long explanation. The first enlightenment eradicates visikesha, nivarana, and kamachanda, vyabhada, kokucha, which means greed, very strong greed, and very strong aversion. And kokucha means regret. It's a kind of regret, is overcome by the third stage of enlightenment. So this is a very important thing to think about. In some other teachings, we hear that if a person has done something wrong, and if a person thinks about his misdeed and feels very unhappy about it, oh, I've done something wrong, I've done something wrong, and lament and cry and beat himself or herself, oh, I've done something wrong, I'm so bad. In some teachings, they say that this is a good thing to do. Regret is a good thing to do. But in the teaching of the Buddha, regret is not good. But what do you mean by that? If a person has done something wrong, then not to regret is that very good? Regret which comes with deep understanding is good. Which means that you don't go on crying about it, you learn from it. You see that, yes, I've done something wrong, and I will not do it again. Finish. If I have to suffer for it, okay, I'm brave enough to suffer for it, for my misdeed. But I'm not going to cry for it anymore. But no use just dwelling on what you've done, and feel unhappy about it, and not being able to do anything else. Don't waste your time.
If you have done something wrong, learn from it and correct yourself and do something good. Go on, go ahead with your work. So, you see, the Buddha's teaching is to go ahead, to learn and to grow. You know the root meaning of the word kokocha? Although we translate that as regret, is there any word for regret similar to the word regret? Remorse, yes, remorse. Thank you. Remorse, regret. The root word for kokocha is ko and kata. The two words together made the word kokocha. Ko means bad, kata means done. Ko kata. And that doesn't really explain the meaning very clearly, but the real meaning is, if you are in remorse, that is something very ugly. That itself is something unwholesome. Because look deep into your mind, when you are in remorse, when you are feeling remorse, when you are feeling regret, what is your mental state? Is that peaceful? And look at it very deeply. The more you regret, the more it shows that you are clinging to it. The more it shows that you are clinging to self also. I. Very interesting, these things are. So that's why even a sotapanna cannot really overcome kokocha. Sakadagami, the second stage of enlightenment, cannot overcome. Only the third stage of enlightenment can overcome total regret and remorse. Shame, hiri otapa, moral shame, yes, moral dread. But you see, whenever we talk about shame and dread, we have to keep in mind that shame about doing something wrong, dread of doing something wrong, and which is associated with understanding and wisdom. So you are not going to do that. Because of that, you are not going to do that. But what if you have done something wrong? Regret. You feel regret. And also, when you feel ashamed, why do you feel ashamed? Is that because somebody has found that out? If that is the reason, then this is not real moral shame. This is just protecting your self-image. This is just even bigger ego, protecting your ego, your self-image. But real moral dread and shame is associated with wisdom. This is shameful, I will not do that. But if you have done something, you know that, well, this is very shameful what I've done, but I'm not going to do that again. But you don't go on living with that shame and regret and not being able to do anything better. So you have to overcome that shame and regret and go on doing something better. Change yourself. Correct yourself. Yes, remorse, it becomes a remorse. Yes, so shame means before you do that, you are not going to do it. After you have done that, it's remorse. So learn from it, let go. Understanding, compassion, forgiveness, because it's natural for us to make mistakes. Even Venerable Ananda did something very terrible when he was in his, I don't have the English word again, when he was fulfilling his paramis. Even the potential Buddha who became a Buddha, even he did something terrible. He seduced a woman. Venerable Ananda, he was a goldsmith once. And a lot of rich and beautiful women came to him for to make jewelry, and he seduced a lot of them. So that doesn't mean that it's okay to do that, but because of greed, because of desire, because of lust, people do such things. But even from that mistake, you can learn and grow and become liberated. Very, very detailed explanations from many texts about what happens to each stages of enlightenment, but you don't have that much time. If you are still interested in going into deep detail, I'm willing to do that another course. So, Ariya, Sila Kanya Sinche Bong, in Burmese it is, and there's some Pali also. The person who's enlightened keeps his Sila pure and intact, no justification. I heard a lot of justification. People say, oh, although he's enlightened, still because of too much temptation, he did this or that. Justifications, no. 5 precepts is the minimum. There's no justification. And in the time of the Buddha, there were many other religious groups. And some religious group have believed that although a person has attained the first stage of enlightenment, because he still have greed and anger or frustration or pride, he can be reborn in a lower realm. The Buddha says no. Although there is still some greed and aversion or pride, the mind is pure enough not to deserve such lower life. So our life is the result of our mind. When the mind has become pure and noble, it cannot manifest into a lower way of life, lower form of life. So that person can feel that I cannot be reborn as a ghost or whatever, lower realm, animal. And the first stage of enlightenment eradicates Nichaditi, Husawada, Bhutva telling lies, but the rest of the verbal misdeed can still happen because the Esotapa can still talk about things in the newspaper. All rubbish. And Nichatanando means misdeed, like killing, stealing, committing adultery. No, Esotapa will never do that. And Nicha Ajiwa, wrong livelihood, cheating in business or things like that. The second stage of enlightenment doesn't eradicate any defilement, only weakens defilement. The third stage of enlightenment, Vichya Sankappa, Pisuna Vacha. Pisuna Vacha means slandering, and Pruta Vacha means very harsh words. And only the fourth stage of enlightenment can eradicate Sampapalapa, talking about newspapers, news in the newspaper. And Michya Vayama, Michya Dadi, Michya Samadhi, Michya Vimuti, Michya Jnana. So these things are very deep and it will take a long time to discuss. So maybe next week I will give some more detail about these things. Today just the introduction. So we end our class today here. If you have any more questions, I'm willing to answer. Next class, maybe I can finish what I want to say in our next meeting. If not, then we can go on to another. But if we can finish next week, that will be the last. Next week, if we have some time, we will do that, yes. Do you have any question about retreat? Format, yes, that's also important to talk about, yes. If you know what's going to happen, then you can prepare yourself. Mm-hmm. I'll remember that. If not next week, then the other week. So if you have any more questions, you may ask the questions now. So even though the person has the first stage of enlightenment, he still has some defilement, please understand that. Because many people say that this person, he's supposed to be enlightened and look, he's reading newspaper. Look, he's enjoying good food. Or whatever. As long as he keeps his 5 precepts intact, good enough. So, do you have a question, please? Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, some people ask, even the Buddha, the same question, exactly the same question. People ask in a very different, slightly different way. Some people ask the Buddha, are there arahants in other religious groups? Buddha didn't say that there are arahants in other religious groups or there are not arahants in the religious group. The answer of the Buddha was that anybody who practiced the Eightfold Noble Path completely can become enlightened and become arahant. So the criterion is the Eightfold Noble Path. Just study Eightfold Noble Path and see if you leave out even one, what will happen? This is just very natural. Just think of the eight factors of the Noble Path and see if you can leave even one out of it. And still believe that without practicing that one factor, a person can become really enlightened or liberated. In the Eightfold Noble Path, there's Vipassana included, Sammasati, Sammasamadhi included there, yes. Right livelihood, right view, right thinking. With wrong view and wrong thinking, how can a person become enlightened? Without right livelihood, without right speech, without right action, without right concentration and right mindfulness, without right effort, without sila, samadhi, panya, all three, nobody can really become liberated. So at least, no matter how short the person practice and become enlightened, at least before the person become enlightened, that person must be practicing completely the Eightfold Noble Path. Some people become enlightened very quickly, in a few hours, even the first stage of enlightenment. 7 lives to go, that's the maximum, not more than 7. We should assume that or understand that even if the Sotapan forgets about practicing his meditation, he cannot forget it for too long. Once he will think about it and then he will practice it again. Enlightenment goes stage by stage, but it can happen in a few moments. Yes, it can happen. Yes. In a few minutes or a few hours, another state, another state. In the text, in the books, I have also read that some people became arahant in one sitting. They have developed their spiritual qualities very highly. So once they know how to practice, they practice it and break through all four stages in one sitting. There's no gap in between, you're not thinking about it. You're not thinking about anything else. One consciousness after another is repeatedly observing very strongly, very clearly. One aspect only, repeatedly. Any one of the three. So that clarity becomes even more and more stronger. At last, total let go. Very, very strong, very powerful insight. Even before that, you can see anicca or dukkha or anatta in series without any gap in between, but weak. The insight is weaker. But in the last few insight, watching, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. So at last the mind is really ready to let go. Special means it's Vipassana consciousness, it's not thinking, it is really seeing the truth. So vipassana actually means extraordinary seeing. Vi means extraordinary. Passa means to see. Not the same moment. Different moments, right. We can see one aspect at a time. Not all at the same time. Yes? How do you know? When you really see, you are not thinking. There's no thinking at all. Just like dark in the night, you are out and looking up at the sky, and suddenly there's a flash of lightning. You see that and it disappears. At that moment, you are not imagining, but you really see it and experience it. When it really happens, it's very different from imagination. In the beginning stage, once in a while. Because we cannot be mindful continuously. And even when you meditate regularly, sometimes you see, sometimes you don't see. And different degrees also. Sometimes you see it vaguely, sometimes it becomes more clear. In the last stage, it's upekkha, yes. Right. That's right. That's why this upekkha is necessary. Total equanimity, total detachment, total balance. Just very clear, detached, watching. No thinking at all. When it becomes very close to breakthrough, no thinking at all. Things become very, very fast. In the beginning, yes, there are gaps thinking, yes. Beginning from the fourth insight, the mind becomes more and more calm, more and more concentrated. Only briefly in between, you might think for a while and you notice the thinking and it goes away. It's not persistent. Thinking is not persistent anymore. It comes very weakly, you can see that and it goes away and you just watch and watch. Goes on and on. In later insight also, especially Benganyana, Bayanyana, Adinawanyana, you think. You begin to think a lot. Oh, so disadvantaged, so many disadvantages. What is there to enjoy? What is there to be happy about? And if you think too much, you become unhappy, very unhappy. There's nothing to be happy. There's no enjoyment anymore. So that is also very important, not to think. When you feel disenchanted, when you become unhappy about the process, if you stop meditating and think about the unhappiness in your daily life, you feel like it's unbearable. You feel very upset about many things. And from the seeing disadvantages and being disenchanted or unhappy about the mental and physical process, you become unhappy about your life situations. And that becomes very depressive. That makes you very depressed. So when you are experiencing that stage, it is very important not to think at all. Thinking is very dangerous. Thinking can create so much. And you become emotional also. So, to understand it, real insight is not emotional. It is clarity of understanding, wisdom. There is no satisfaction, there is no enjoyment in this process anymore. And that is very clear. But if you think about it, you become emotional, you become unhappy and depressed. And all the things irritate you more and more. People irritate you, noise irritate you, everything irritates you. And you get angry sometimes. And that becomes unwholesome mental state. Not wholesome anymore. Insight is very wholesome. When you become angry and upset and depressed, it becomes unwholesome. So that's why not to think. Thinking process combined with some samadhi makes things become even more intense. Samadhi makes everything very intense. So if you want to enjoy anything, make your mind calm and concentrated, you can enjoy it more. Even when I read books, when my mind is very agitated, I cannot enjoy reading books. If I really want to enjoy a book, a story, or a poem, or even a gatha, first I need to make my mind very calm, peaceful. Then I read it. Every word is very rich in meaning. I can really enjoy a poetry, a poem. Even a scenery, if my mind is calm, I look at the sunrise or sunset or whatever, I can get absorbed and it becomes so wonderful. The world is so wonderful, nature is so wonderful. But when the mind is agitated, you can't enjoy that. The same thing, when your mind is somewhat concentrated, you think about something frightening, it becomes even more frightening. When you are too agitated, you are not frightened, you are not angry, you are not anything at all. You are too disturbed. So a disturbed mind, a very agitated mind, cannot take in anything strongly. There's a lot of moha. Odicca is very close together with moha. Odicca means scattered, agitated, scattered mind. So whenever the mind becomes calm and quiet and concentrated, don't imagine anything. Any imagination becomes very real. Good or bad, it can become very real. The most important thing is, whenever a thought comes, pay very close attention to that thought. This is thinking. If you pay very close attention to the thought, it will go away. Whenever it comes, just pay very close attention to thinking. So just paying attention to the thought will make the thought go away. And then bring back your mind to your meditation object. Very simple. Breathing, sensations, vedana, feeling. So the best thing to do is to pay attention to the thought. Not to encourage yourself, not to... Sometimes people enjoy thinking. So if you find yourself enjoying thinking, watch that enjoyment. I like thinking. I like to think. I want to think. Wanting to think. We really want to think. It's so difficult not to think. Sometimes we can let go and stay quiet, not thinking. But, you know, thinking creates that we are. I am. Thinking creates that I am. When you stop thinking, you become very unreal sometimes. You feel that something is missing. There's nothing to hold on to. When thinking stops, things become very vague in the beginning. So we have the habit of holding on to something by thinking about it. So in a way, thinking is holding on, grasping. Even when you are angry about somebody, you keep thinking about that person, it means that you are attached to that idea. You are attached to what happened, you cannot let go. So thinking means holding on to, grasping, creating something, making your experience real. So now we will conclude our class here. So let's pay honor to the Buddha who is really worthy of honor. I honor the Buddha by the very practice which leads to liberation. I honor the Dharma by the very practice which leads to liberation. I honor the Sangha by the very practice which leads to liberation.